save your applause for later and see if you still mean it. I don't think we need this, do we? You can hear me all right this way, can't you? Oh, you want to record? Okay. Well, I'm not sure it's worth recording. If you want to record, I'll stay here. Well, it's delightful for me to have this pause in the week's activities. It's been some months ago since I agreed to come here. How long has it been? 3, 4, 5 months. And I wrote into my book, Siloam, and I'm not quite sure what those letters mean anymore, but since you all do, we don't need to repeat them. I'd like to talk to you a little bit today about missions in the Missouri District. I don't know anything about missions in Nigeria except what I read in the Lutheran Witness. I don't know anything about missions in Texas except what I've heard from Glenn O'Shoney, you know, and what I read. But I would like to share a few things about the Missouri District. First of all, I want all of you to know that our youngest son, Paul, is here today. Some of you know him, and some of you don't. And if you don't know him, that's my son back there. And he came here to listen to me, and the next day or two, he'll tell me what he thought about it, and maybe even add some correctives here and there. For about the last 6 years, I've served as Director of Missions. I really wish they'd change the title of that. I don't like that word, Director of Missions, you know. But that's just what the title happens to be, and I have to live with that. And one of the obligations that I have in connection with this is to work with missions all over the district. And that gives us a problem too, because most of my work is really with subsidized ministries. We still have the old-fashioned notion that the mission board deals just with subsidized ministries. We really deal with all of them, but most of our attention is on subsidized ministries. I might tell you that several years ago we were aiming at having a conference of our men in the subsidized parishes, and I think I can safely in this group talk about men in the subsidized ministries, and they objected. They said, we don't want to have a conference of missionaries unless all the pastors in the district are involved and invited. Well, we're still working that through. But when I'm director of missions, I'm really director of subsidized ministries and, of course, working with all of them. The work which we carry on falls into several broad categories. And in some of these, we don't really have too much experience. And I dare to start with an area in which we don't have as much experience, expertise or know-how as I wish that we might. That's the inner city. The reason I start there is because I just talked to someone from the inner city about an hour ago before I came here. And I don't think we have all the answers. We haven't had, statistically, any sparkling success in the inner city, either in Kansas City or St. Louis. We have quite a number of parishes in which we attempt integration of cultures and people with different ethnic backgrounds, and we really have not had any real statistical success. We have closed very few. We have closed some. We've closed a mission about 4 years ago, which was in Pruitt-Igoe, and I guess it's a good thing we closed it because Pruitt-Igoe came down with some explosive devices. We were renting facilities in Pruitt-Igoe, and then when Pruitt-Igoe was closed by the U.S. government, we had no choice but to terminate that ministry. We couldn't really move it because we already had churches right near there, Transfiguration, Zion Lutheran Church, Good Shepherd, and others. So in the inner city, we spend lots of money. Statistically, we don't have much to show for it. And yet, these are surely God's people. And I think we need forever to be in the real struggle to try to find new ways and means in which we can communicate to the people on their level, which may be higher than ours, maybe alongside of ours or whatever, the gospel of Christ. I'm not certain that we have trained men too well for parishes which are integrated. I really don't know how you train them either, so when I utter the criticism, I don't mean to say that I have the answers, but I am with you groping for ways, new approaches, to get the mission command of our blessed Lord fulfilled. So that's one great big area, and we have quite a few of those congregations here in St. Louis. Let me just mention some of them. On the south side, we have Old Trinity, you know, one of the mother churches. We have a school there. Let me just share with you one or two of the problems. Old Trinity is old. They have an old building. Just the energy situation there is boggling in terms of cash. And now, the church is listed in the historical landmarks, which means that when the door has to be replaced, it has to be replaced according to certain standards. I think the two front doors, which need replacing, and I'm not sure of this, so if it's on the tape, you know, forgive me, wipe that out. I think it's something like $1,600 for two doors. And I submit that $1,600 for two doors doesn't really do ministry the way we'd like to see it. They have a school. School is expensive. The people who are moving into the community are not wealthy people, but they're God's people. And the congregation doesn't know what to do. They had a rather sizable endowment fund, and they've been spending from the endowment fund. And if they keep on spending the way they have been spending the last two or three years, and I don't mean to say that it's been that much more than in previous years, they'll be out of their endowment fund in about 18 months. Then what happens? We're subsidizing them, but we don't have the cash to subsidize them for all the money they need to carry on their ministry. That's one. Holy Comforter. By the way, somebody said Holy Comforter was on TV Sunday night. Anybody see it? Scaffolding up. Well, Holy Comforter is at 10th and Rutger. Pastor Eugene Caney, by the way, Pastor Sam Galterman is at Trinity, and Pastor Eugene Caney is at Holy Comforter. And right now we're in a real struggle there, and we also don't really know what to do. It's an old, old building. We never owned it originally. It was a Presbyterian church. We moved in there about 30 years ago. So it hasn't, you know, the sentiment. Nobody can say, well, you know, it's always been ours. There's a fake ceiling put in it. Old. It's in the Ralston-Purina redevelopment area. The St. Louis land clearance for redevelopment is breathing hard down our necks and asking us, what are you going to do? They have the right of eminent domain over that area. They're willing to sign off if we repair the building, which their architect said would cost us about $80,000 two years ago, and which we think will be closer to $200,000, and we had some people in there, and they said it isn't worth putting in any money. Now, we met there on February the 11th. Is that a Sunday? Sounds pretty good. February 11th. No, February 18th. We met there February 18th. And when some of our men saw it, they said, let's not put any money in it. We said, well, that's all right. We're going to report to the board of directors on the 22nd of March. And now, 2 days later, the chimney fell in. Missouri District has title to the property, and we have no choice under building code to repair the chimney. And the bill just arrived on my desk this morning. And they asked, well, what should they do? Well, we had to fix it. I talked to the chairman of the committee. I said, I thought these were pretty good words. I said, do emergency work on it, which would be prudent. To do the prudent work is $4,000 for a chimney. Well, that's another one of our inner city ministries. And we have Christ Church on the south side at Theresa and Caroline. Again, in a redevelopment area, because St. Louis University is right next to Christ Lutheran Church, and we anticipate that that area will be redeveloped with housing and such like. In the meantime, we're not sure how long we can hold out. On the north side, we have one of our churches, which has had some, I think, solid success, and that's Transfiguration at 18th and Biddle. It's in a building which the Missouri District owns, and that means we have to pay the expenses for repair. We have Zion Lutheran Church, which is not subsidized because they have a big endowment fund, but their endowment fund is also going downhill. We have St. Stephen's Lutheran Church at Olive and Pendleton, also a church which is expensive to operate in terms of energy, and we have an integrated church there. That church also supports Central City School. Pastor Taglauer serves there. We have Marcus Lutheran Church. I don't know the exact address, but I know where it is. Pastor Jack Flaxbart is there. They're celebrating their 75th anniversary this year and are trying to decide whether they should have a requiem service in November and call it quits, because we have all kinds of Lutheran churches up in that area. We have Bethlehem Lutheran Church, a huge building. Pastor Adolf Meyer served there. He's now retired. He had a heart attack, retired, so they're vacant. They have a vacancy pastor. Oh, which other ones? St. Matthew's is a going concern. Pastor Bud Fail is there, and they have a school, and they seem to be having as much success with an integrated ministry as any church in the St. Louis metro area. Altogether, for those inner city churches, we call them church and community, we are spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 annually in subsidy. And the question always comes up, you know, is this the wisest expenditure? Do we have the right kind of people trained to do the work? What is the measure of success in that kind of a church? And I don't claim to have all the answers to that. Let's move on to some other kinds of ministries. Starting new churches. On Friday night, Mrs. Meyer went along with me this weekend. I visited in Springfield, Missouri, where we started a new church. And what we did there, and this is really how we prefer to do it, we like to plant new churches as a strawberry plant. You know, where there are already churches in existence, we hope there will be a cadre of individuals interested in the establishment of a new church. And that's what happened in Springfield. That congregation is about 3 years old. We processed that entire ministry, helping them buy property, put up a building, calling pastors. This is their second one. Their first pastor had a heart attack. He did not die, but he was disabled as a result and was not able to continue. By the way, that congregation is served by Mark Stenbeck from Dallas, Texas. He just moved up here, was installed on the first Sunday in January. And they're really well on the way. They have a beautiful facility. Their average attendance, and they're only 3 years old, maybe four, I don't know exactly. Their average attendance now is already about 150 on Sundays, so you know they're off and running. We recently started a new church in South Kansas City in Peculiar, Missouri. And I have always been saying that when they started that, again, by Lutheran Christians from the surrounding churches who live there, indicating their desire to establish a church, and they're still worshiping in a school, I always said, I hope that when they start their church, they don't call it Peculiar Lutheran Church. Which wouldn't be a bad name, you know, rightly understood. Well, I want to tell you they didn't. They called it Abiding Faith. They're worshiping in a school. We're supplying subsidy to them, and right now they are well into their building program. We just reviewed their plans, and they have some exciting plans. I think they had a good architect, and if everything rolls right, they hope to break ground sometime in May. I'm guessing it won't be till June, but I always hesitate to tell them that. I met with them first last July, and they thought they'd be under roof by October. without even having an architect. So you know their enthusiasm for getting on the way. They now have about 70 members in the congregation and also are doing very well. Pastor Jim Mays is their pastor, and they're also well on the way, and we try to process subsidy with them. Sunday afternoon, I preach for the installation of Dirk Vanderlinde in Kearney, Missouri. Kearney, Missouri is one of our more recent starts. We were there for their initiating service in January of 1978, and they're worshiping in a school. And since that time, the congregation organized, called itself Trinity, bought property, that is, with our church extension money. I also happen to be in charge of church extension in the Missouri District, so it kind of ties things together a little bit. And they called Dirk Vanderlinde. He accepted the call, was installed there Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Now, one of the ways in which church extension works here, too, they had no place for him to live. So we had to buy a parsonage for him, which the Missouri District still owns. I didn't see it, but I hope we got a good deal. But we have to sort of trust them. He had a hand in picking it out, and I think he should have, since he's going to live there. So we bought the parsonage, and that's also part of the total deal. One of the significant things about new church starts today is you can't start them anymore for $50,000. There's no way. The congregation is peculiar. Let's just deal with that one, just by way of one example. We bought land. Oh, that cost us $25,000 for 5 acres. Not too bad. And, by the way, land prices are also escalating. Right now we're dickering for some land in Lee's Summit. We think we'll be able to buy the 5 acres we want, and it'll cost us $150,000 for 5 acres of land. You know, that's just unreal. Anybody here from Oakville? In Oakville, we bought property. We bought 20 acres down there, and we paid $175,000 for land. Isn't that terrible? I think it is, but you just don't have much choice. Although when it comes to land, we would much rather spend $10,000 for an acre for good property than get land for $3,000 an acre out in the country behind some elm tree, you know, where nobody can find it. We had a situation like that some time ago in Rolla, where we wanted to buy land at the edge of the city limit, but in the city limits, and one of the men said, well, he said, you know, $10,000 an acre for 5 acres, that's too much. He said, I know a piece of property out here. It's about 8 miles out in the country. We can buy 18 acres. And he said, I think we can get the whole thing for $15,000. Well, we bought the land in the city limits for obvious reasons, because the flow of traffic is from the country to the city for anything. People who live out in the country go to the city for their haircuts, for their gasoline, for their groceries, for everything else, and they do it for church too. So our mission start, for example, in Peculiar, would be $25,000 for land. We've allocated $185,000 for their first unit. Don't quote me to them. I don't think they're going to get it for $185,000. I think it'll be more like $210,000 by the time they're really done. I hope they're right. And I don't in any way want to pour any cold figures on their excitement. But then we'll have to subsidize that for a couple of years, and that new mission start ultimately may cost the district up to $300,000, maybe more. And that's why we can't be starting one every week. We also don't have the manpower for it, of course. Well, those are just some of the more recent starts. We started one in Warsaw, by the way, Warsaw, Chesterfield, Lord of Life, West St. Louis County, where I happen to have my membership, and where I met with the church council last night. Cross of Christ Lutheran Church in Oakville, Peculiar, Missouri, Kearney, or some Donovan, Missouri, Redeemer in Rolla, are some of the starts that we, are some of the starts. We had a few others too, I just can't think of them offhand, that we've been involved in the last several years. I'd like to touch on several other items of missions, subsidized ministries in our Missouri district. We have two deaf ministries. And we work with them too. We have one in St. Louis, one in Kansas City. By the way, deaf ministries are really specialized ministries, and they're not cheap. And I don't think ever will be cheap. Because I don't think that I can honestly pray for a deaf ministry to become self-supporting. There are several things which militate against self-support for deaf ministry. One is, the deaf have a handicap. And it is likely that the deaf will not get the high-paying jobs because of their handicap. That's one of the facts of life. The second one is that for a deaf ministry to be self-supporting means we need more deaf. And you can't honestly pray the Lord to send us more deaf. And so I'll say, well, we're going to do the job. It's going to be expensive, and we hope we never get out of it. Except through no deaf. So we have a deaf ministry in St. Louis and Kansas City. Both currently vacant. Pastor Martin Hewitt served here at Holy Cross for the Deaf. Pastor Walter Ulig served in Kansas City, and the congregations are both calling today. In addition to that, we have campus ministries. Some full-time, we have all kinds in the state. We have a campus ministry in Columbia, which is a full-blown congregation, worshiping in property owned by the Missouri District. We have a campus, that's a full-blown congregation. We have a full-time campus ministry in Cape Girardeau, served by David Bass. But that's more of a student assembly. They don't have a congregation with voting rights and so on. We have another full-time campus ministry in Warrensburg, Central Missouri State. In addition to that, we have quite a number of town gown ministries in Maryville, in Kirksville, in Rolla, in Springfield. And then we have some other kinds, and they defy description. We have a campus ministry in Kansas City. We own property. We really don't know what to do with it because the University of Missouri at Kansas City, as well as the schools here in St. Louis, are almost all commuter schools, or at least suitcase colleges. Washington University has some dormitories, but not too many. The University of Missouri is practically straight out commuter. The community colleges are that way. Kansas City, Missouri University is the same way. So we really are not having any good success. We don't really know how to handle it. We had some full-time campus pastors here in St. Louis, Pastor Donald Bornke, a number of years ago. And we had a facility on Skinker, not too far from Washington University, but a little bit too far for students, and we didn't have any success there. We had a number of people since that time, and in the last 2 years, we have had no one employed to carry on campus ministry, and we really don't know how to go about it. There are those who say, well, we ought to have a campus minister just for the sake of presence. I think that's a great word, but I don't know how much of the mission it gets done. You know, we just ought to have presence. I'm not sure what that all means, but I know other people know what it means. I'll let them explain it. What else am I missing? Oh, chaplaincies. We have two chaplaincy programs, one in Kansas City and one in St. Louis. The chaplaincy program here in St. Louis directs its efforts at the poor, the forsaken, the downtrodden, the lonely. For example, we have chaplains who work at Crow Hospital. at Truman Restorative Center, which is a fancy name for nursing home. We have ministry at City Hospital in St. Louis. It's just initiating ministry also at St. Louis County Hospital. We have ministry at the city jail. And in addition to the chaplain, we also have an ombudsman, and I still think that word ought to be changed someday. I hope some of you make a contribution to the English language by getting a better word than ombudsman. But we carry that on, and in Kansas City we have chaplains too who work at hospitals and nursing homes. That's sort of the scope of the work in which I'm engaged in terms of missions. And I want to pause here for any questions which you may have. I can go on for a long time, but I'd rather have you ask questions if you wish. And by the way, let me say this too. In good faith, when you're tired, just walk out. And when, like Paul on Mars Hill, I'm convinced he quit preaching on Mars Hill because everybody walked out on him. Just read that again sometime in Acts. I really think that Paul kept on preaching on Mars Hill, and they finally said, well, we'll listen to you some other time, and away they went. That's a free translation of the Greek, by the way. We'll listen to you some other time. Yeah. It is my opinion that the greatest hindrance to the start of new missions is well-trained men. Without question. I can talk about the ministry because I'm in it. You know, some of us in the ministry are not as dedicated to the ministry as we might well be. First of all, there aren't enough to go around. And sometimes, you're not putting any of this in the paper from here on in. Sometimes we just move warm bodies around. You know, I really think that in some of our ministries, we don't get much done. This morning I called a pastor to talk to him. I didn't want to call too early. Called him at 9:15, got him out of bed. That doesn't impress me. Now, he maybe worked very hard last night. Okay, that answer your question? We need well-trained men, dedicated. And by trained, I guess I don't even mean, and I dare to say that on a campus which teaches theology, I think that they ought to have a good theological training. But I think of equal importance is their ability to relate to people. You can have all the knowledge of Christ in the world, but if you cannot communicate it to people, if you don't want to communicate it to people, it doesn't really wash. You know, I'm all in favor of the finest theological training, but let's get people who relate to people, who can go and talk to them and be excited about what Christ means to them, you know, and who will pour themselves into the work. Sometimes the most prominent thing is in the bulletin in some churches is the announcement when the pastor is off.
Yeah, on that same line, what kind of pastor would you say are most effective in this congregation? Like the younger pastor who's full of fire, the older ones who've had a lot of experience, or just
whatever? Age makes no difference. It's the man who's really interested. I talked to Herb Rowe. Anybody here know Herb Rowe? Herb Rowe in Nevada, Missouri, Saturday. And I knew before I went there, I was sure before I went there what he would tell me. And he would tell me that El Dorado Springs is a holding action, that we have an average attendance of 15 on Sundays. And that Nevada, Missouri is really the chief part of his ministry, and things aren't going too well either. What he told me was, El Dorado is exciting. He said, would you believe it? I've been here 10 months and the membership has doubled. We now have 40 and we're outgrowing the facility. You know, I didn't believe him at first, but he convinced me. You know, I went there with a set. I knew what he was going to tell me, except he didn't. and he said, El Dorado is really going. He said, my problem is I don't have enough time to get all the calls made. And this man is really excited. Herb Rowley is 60 years old. Really doing a great job. The excitement, the interest, the desire to serve people is fundamental. Age doesn't make that much difference. That's my judgment. Any other questions? Yes. Well, I think success in the ministry involves a number of things. I think for a pastor to be successful, he himself has to be happy and joyful and be preaching the word to himself. Now, he also needs to be in the word, studying the word, and be growing in his relationship in Christ Jesus. The other thing in terms of success is that he relates to people and shares the gospel with them, with the hope that there would be two kinds of growth. Statistical growth is easy to measure, but that's not the only kind of growth. And just statistics doesn't always tell the story either. But by the same token, I also am less than excited when people say, well, you can't really count statistics. You ought to see how the people have grown. And I agree, but lots of times that's just a cover-up, too. Not always, but sometimes it is. And the other thing, of course, is that the people grow, you know, in grace and in their relationship with Christ. And you can't really measure that. Except, when you have your eyes open, you can just about tell what's happening. Not for sure, of course not, but just about. Recently, I preached at a small congregation. It was the most depressing thing in the world for me. There were about 75 people in that congregation. And through the whole service, as we sang and prayed, and as I preached, not a soul in there gave any evidence of joy. Just all really sour. And I said, well, I wonder what's wrong. You know, and you can't prove anything by that. The only thing I can tell you is that, the only thing I can prove is that they didn't look happy. They might even have been happy. They just didn't look happy. By the way, while I did that morning, I don't do that often. On the way out, I parked myself right at the front door. And I kind of spread my foot out, and I made everybody go by me. And I shook hands with them, and I greeted them. I said, isn't it a great day? And I got at least half of them to smile, if only for 10 seconds. You know? But why not? Why shouldn't Christians be happy? Anyway, success, I think, means that the pastor himself grows in grace, that he gets the people to do that which would help them grow in grace, such as Bible study groups, you know, work with the word. Hopefully they will give some evidence of their relationship to Christ, whether that is in some efforts of social ministry or things of that sort. Depends upon the local situation. And then I would hope there would also be some statistical measurement which would be on the positive side. That's how I feel about it. Anything else? Well, I think we've... Go ahead. Did you have a question yet? That's right. That's right. However, in our Missouri district, we fracture the ministry. I guess every district does. You know, we have a Department of Evangelism, Board of Evangelism. Pastor Biesenthal was with us. We currently have vacancy. Well, you'd say, well, why is evangelism separate from missions? The only reason it is because you have to make some division somewhere, you know. This isn't to say that there isn't tremendous integration between the two, but only for the sake of getting the job done. he also had stewardship. That's part of the mission. But you have to break it. And then we have another exec in the area of parish education. It's all part of the ministry. My job is primarily with subsidy, with dollars, to help them carry on. We try to be as careful with this as we can, to use the money wisely, which our people contribute. I think we do a pretty good job. I better say that, because I'm kind of responsible for it. We do the best we know how. Let me share with you just one item in connection with dollars. We don't have a very high mission scale in our district for young men who come to us. Our starting salary in the Missouri district for graduates from Concordia Seminary is $9,100 salary plus $3,900 for housing, for a total package of $13,000 to start. I wish it could be several thousand dollars higher, but that's the best we can do right now because we have between 65 and 70 ministries. In addition to that, we provide car allowance, $85 a month plus 9 cents a mile, and keep the two together. So it isn't 9 cents a mile, it's not $85 a month, but it's 85 basic plus an additional 9 cents a mile. We pay the full Concordia plans. I wish we could do much more than that, but that's about the limit right now for us. Any other questions? If not, I want to thank you. Enjoy the afternoon, whether it's golf or class or whatever, you know. I guess, you know, maybe you do, I don't know if you do those things. We used to play bridge. I don't know if you do that or not, but we used to. That was sometimes as enjoyable as classes. So thanks a lot. It's great being here with you.